Today we will be interviewing Bob Hatcher. It is December 7th, 1992, which is Pearl Harbor Day.
I grew up in the state of North Carolina, and I went to school there, elementary school and high school there. And as I was coming out of high school at 17, I was a seventh grader, and I volunteered for the aviation cadet. And I took that. In order to do that, you'd have to pass a statewide test and meet all qualifications with recommendations. At that time, you had to be recommended by several big business people that knew you. And then when I turned 18, I went in and they let me out to finish high school. And then when time come for me to return back, I decided, well, I didn't think I wanted to be a cadet. So then I stayed out, and then I was drafted into the service from North Carolina, went to Fort Bragg at that time, and I went to training there, and I got in Fort Bragg. I was offered the officer's candidate school, and they had told me in my exam that I was wouldn't probably stay in service very long because of my some health problem that they didn't tell me what was wrong. And I still haven't found out today if I had a problem. And so anyhow, I left Fort Bragg, North Carolina, went into Camp Gordon, Georgia, and from Camp Gordon, I went into Fort McClellan, Alabama. That's where I took training as an infantry, with an infantry regiment. I don't remember the numbers, but all I know is the first time I saw so many men in all my life is a kid from the country and who lived on a farm. And I took infantry training there. Trained there for 16 weeks for readiness for overseas. And I did get to go back home and for a little short vacation, 3 day or 5 day, I guess it was. And then I went to camp. From there, I went to, came to Fort Lawton in Washington State there for a while. And we were there, and that's when I first ran into the German prisoners who was our cooks and things in the kitchen. From there, I went to Fort Ord, California, and from Fort Ord, California, we took some additional training for overseas, and then from that, I was loaded onto a troop ship with many other regiments, I guess you'd say, and personnel heading for overseas. We didn't know where we were going. As usual, back in those days, you had no idea, and you just was going. All I know, it was a long ship ride, and thank goodness I did not get sick or anything on the ship. So I wound up in Okinawa. That's the next thing I know, I wound up in Okinawa. I've been from Okinawa. It's strange, I don't even remember the troop ship's name, that one I was on. And from Okinawa, I came into the Aleutian Islands. They sent me from Okinawa, and along with other people. We were with the Stevedore Company, and I was also, I was in the ordnance. I took ordnance training too, for guns and all that stuff. And I come into the Aleutian Islands, which was at ADAC at the time. And then I went into Attu, Kisker, and all the other. And then back to ADAC was the base, main base where I was stationed. And I was there attached to Stevedore's engineering outfit. And at that time, I was reclassified and went into the 4221st Quartermaster Trucking outfit there in the Aleutians, and that was the company that I was assigned to. And during my stay there, when I got into the Aleutian, the battle part of that Aleutian was over. Biggest, it was not. I did not do any real hand-to-hand combat with that. Yes, I was one of the few lucky ones that didn't have to do it. Only thing we did is get out, stand watch for the Japanese to be sure that the bombers that they bombed there with. Watch for them and use what we had. And as I started to say, when I come into the Aleutian Islands, we had nothing but khakis. And at that time, well, this lasted 44, I guess, yeah. At that time, I think the best winter clothing that they had that we got was the leather boots, and they had what they called the Army Parka at that time, and they had leather gloves with the insert, and that was supposed to be the best clothing that we had for the Arctic. That's all we got anyway. But before we received that clothing, the Sovelos had khakis and the stuff for the Pacific, and boy, we like to froze to death when we got into there. And standing watch at times there, myself and a guy from Arkansas, and I think another guy from St. Louis. We were three, and we had dugouts that we made there that had been made, and then we made them too, that we dug out in the mountains and they were covered with snow and dirt. That's the kind of dugouts we had back way out in the hills. Close in around the main base there, we had the concrete fortification there and gun emplacement. So you had to stand your watch 24 hours on, and then you'd get off for, if they could get you, go come find you where you were, you'd get off for 8 hours, and then we would watch them. As I mentioned, when we'd stand to watch, the only thing we had to keep us warm inside of those, we call them igloos at the time, or bungalows, we had candles that we could burn, and that was it. We didn't have no other means of warming other than your clothes that you had on. And so as most people know that's been in the Aleutian, that's one of the worst islands for storms. I've never seen anything like it. But I'd like to jump back and say that when I was heading that direction, that's one time they told us where we were going. So we're going to the Aleutian Islands, and there was a woman behind every tree. And I remembered reading a little about Alaska when I was in high school, but I really didn't remember anything of the Bear Islands or anything like that. But when I got there, I think most of us were looking to see how many trees were there, especially young men, 17, 18, well, some of them were 17 that sneaked in, but 18 and on up. And I was just 18. To get back to that, we have that little national forest out there. The first tree was planted a little bit, I think, before I got there. Then we had the one, and I don't know exactly what outfit did that, but I remember when it was done, they added to it, and we called it the National Forest, Adak's National Forest, in that little tree. We would go out to Finger Bay, and out into, I think they had a mountain there, Mount Moffat, which was the high mountain. And that gets me back to where we were standing watch, and we were out just the opposite of that, as I was staying in those bungalows. And we had a big snowstorm, and we got snowed in, and they couldn't find us for 3 days, I believe, or 3 to 4 days, and we were there. We had a K-ration, the hard tax, as you call it, and I couldn't drink coffee because it made me sick. And we did have the little thing that we could warm up. It's K-ration. Some of them had that where you could strike the powder on the bottom of the can and would heat what you had. So we got by on what we had, and when time we had gotten so cold in there that the gloves that you have on, and I, not knowing anything about hyperthermia and frostbite and all of that, all I knew about was freezing. And I didn't, at that time you get to the point where you just, what your gloves you have on, you just drop them because your hands are hurting, and then they become numb, and then you don't have no feeling in them all. So while being there, and then when they finally got in there to get us out, we went back into the camp, and my hands and feet and my face, not only me, there's a couple other guys, was frozen so bad when we got into. They told us to go in and take warm showers, and said, and I've never had anything hurt me any worse, I don't think. That's when the feeling began to come back to a certain part of my hands, the upper part of my hands, and my feet and my face. It just ached like the toothache. And so with the sick bay, Well, there's nothing they could do. The only thing they told us, well, you just have to take warm showers. At that time, they had no real history, to my knowledge, to how to treat hypothermia and frozen limbs. And so that's what we would do. We'd take a warm shower. And then when they saw that the flesh in my cheeks were just like a rock, all my fool's cheeks on both of us guys were just like rocks, and our hands were real weird color, and they were just, the flesh on certain part areas was just hard. They shipped us to Fort Rich, and that was in Fort Rich, and that was the last part. That was in 45 then. Coastal War was winding down and coming to an end. It did, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. And was in Fort Rich, they sent us up there to the dispensary to see what they could do for us up there. Well, the only thing they did for us up there, it was a little warmer, they told us, at ADAC, that maybe it would just throw our grads in, that's the best treatment that they could give us. Stayed there for 30 days, I believe it was in TDY, as you call it, for 30 days at Fort Rich. And that was a shipping point from Fort Rich for overseas for the Aleutians. If you come in through Washington State or they flew you into there, then they would ship you out to the Aleutians in that area. But we come the other way. And being there for that length of time, I remember Anchorage was just a small town. Fourth Avenue was had a small paved section in it, all around through where Third and all of that, and biggest part was trees and wood. And I remember going to the servicemen's club, which was setting into the wooded area. And one place, I do remember that 515 bar there was there. The enlisted would go there. And so, but Anchorage was smaller than right here in Kodiak, but in my opinion, it was all scattered than it was when I first come here. It was just scattered out. And I said to myself, I don't know what in the world ever got it. I said, I don't know why they ever sent me up here. That was my thought in mind. I said, just as soon as I can get out of here, I'm going back to where it's warm weather. And so, wound up from staying there for that month. But before I moved from that, at that time, I met some people in Anchorage that had been in the war and got out on disability early, and they had made some stakes up there and had land claim stakes. At that time, you could stake off any section that you wanted and put $100 improvement on it, and then the land would be deeded. You could get a deed to it, and several people did that. But I had no intentions of ever staying in Alaska, and so I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, hindsight, man, as I can see, I wished I had it done. But then I went back to the Aleutian Islands, and then the time come for when the war, after the war had ended there, we begin to say certain regiments or certain groups could go home. And so they, where I worked, a lot of the time was in the ordnance department and in a machine shop, which I was had training to do, and I liked to work. And then I worked with a bunch of civilians that were there working for the Department of Defense. And they all, I become friends to a lot of them, and to the head supervisors and all of that, and they liked the work I did and saw what the type of tradesman I was and asked me if I would like to, why didn't I get out and just stay as a machinist for them there? And I said, well, I don't know, I'll think about it. And so I told them that first, I said, no, I'm going to mechanical engineering school, and that's what I want to do. And so they said, well, why don't you work a while before you go? And so I said, well, all right, I did. So I took Alaskan discharge. I talked to two other friends of mine. We both took Alaskan discharge in the Aleutian Islands. One of them went to was driving a truck for the oil distributor company, and he was in stevedore. At beforehand, the other guy is a heavy equipment operator who is in Anchorage right now. That was out there with me, and he's retired from civil service. And so I went to work in the machine shop. So I said, "Well, I'll work for 6 months." I worked 6 months, and decided that I would go down. apply for the school engineering in University of Washington. So I applied, and my time come, and I decided to go to university, and I had the privilege of saying, I'm going. I asked them if I went down and decided not to stay, could I come back and go and have my job back? And the general foreman, well, it wasn't called general foreman then, but superintendent said, if you'd like to do that, go down. If you don't want to stay, for some reason or other, within 6 months, just give me a call and you can come right back. So I flew to Seattle, and I think that's the first time I'd been out of Alaska and the Aleutian Islands since I arrived there. I never did leave from the time that I arrived there until I went to Seattle. And when I went into Seattle, no, I didn't fly to Seattle. Went down to Seattle on a Funston, a troop ship, which was called a Funston. Pretty nice ship compared to what we went over in before. And when I got into Seattle, out in the bay there, you could see those lights, and man, I said, it just looked like kind of like heaven, you might say, or well, it was really thrilling to see those bright lights. And then they wouldn't take us in that night. We had to sit right out there in the sound, Puget Sound, and watch the lights all night, and then we'd come in the next day. Well, so when we got in the next day, then they let us off, and then I went and applied for the schooling, and then I decided to go home back to North Carolina doing that while my paperwork was going through. So I went on training to North Carolina, all the way back to North Carolina to visit my mother and folks, and went and stayed about a week there, and then came back to Seattle, and I was, well, I called them, and I was accepted for the engineering school, and I went there, and I could only go to school a half a day because there were so many servicemen coming out and going into schools. Well, the University of Washington could not absorb them and teach all day. They had so many students, they were just giving you a half a day class, and I didn't like that idea because I said, well, man, if I can only go for half a day, I'm going to miss something or either take me longer. So I asked them if I, we talked about maybe a year later, and they said, well, maybe a year later we'll be able to absorb the for a full day course. So I said, well, I'm going back to my job, and then I'll just keep my application, and I'll reapply maybe 6 months, a year later. So I went back to Aleutian Islands, went back to work in the machine shop, and then one thing to another, I had, in my opinion, was a good job for a country boy. I was making $1.32 an hour along with the rest of the people. That was a journey. I hadn't got my journeyman status, but I did get that after 2 years, and then going to school and taking courses, and then doing that, and I think we was making all journeymen tradesmen at that time was probably making $1.50 or $60.75 an hour, and that was big money. That was big money. We worked a lot of long hours, and so I stayed there and worked, and other things like home, which I was taking care of my mother, and had two sisters in college. I was helping do that, because which I left out. My father died in 32, and that was during the Depression time, and I know what that's like. And my mother raised six kids, and it was not easy for us. If we hadn't lived on the farm, I don't know what we would have done. But anyhow, I felt I had an obligation to take care of her, along with my other sisters and other two brothers who were in service, and to send my two sisters to school. And so that's what I did. I wound up working there from 45 through 46 for the government civil service. I worked from there till 49. Then in 49, they closed down that ship repair, marine repair area out there. At that time, during World War II, all the transport ships and all your seagoing ships, other than the Navy fighting ships, were under the Army Transportation Corps. So we took care of a lot of the maintenance on that, because that was really what I did when I was in service with the transportation quartermaster, was to maintain ships and whatever and supply them. So they saw that they didn't need that service, that out there anymore. And then a lot of it, I guess, at that time was being switched into what they call MATS or ATS, And then they closed down the shop, and they wanted to know if I wanted to transfer into Kodiak at a big machine shop here. And I said, well, yeah, I guess so. So I left there in 49, came into Kodiak in December of 49 in the, worked on the base out there, and I was working for the Department of Defense with what's known as the ATS out here on the base. We worked there for the, which took in the whole 9 months peninsula. We had all, we did everything there from soup to nuts. We had our own pattern shop, we had had foundries, we had molds and machine shop. If it was anything needed, that outfit that I was in there, we did it, because we did the same thing here, basically did at ADAC, and we had a floating dry dock there that we could bring and work up ships as large as the LST, one of the main ones. A lot of times it's 1032 that we had used in war, and then we had the, believe it or not, the old stores is still here. We've done, she was here at that time, they had the stores, the bittersweet, and any big vessels that had problems that come in or in this area, they could bring them in out to our yard out here, at the government's yard. We did the work for them, and we did a tremendous amount of work there, from engine building all the way up to prop pitching and repairs and shaft repair. That was my, a lot of the stuff that I did as a machinist, and then I worked up to a lead man there in the shop, and I continued to work on the base until 1971. Prior to 71, I think about 60, they closed down the they phased out the ATS part, ship repair department, and they transferred us all into the main base shop, which was a smaller shop, right, which was directly under the Navy. And I worked there and went in there as a machinist, and then I got into, was elevated to maintenance control inspector, and worked there. And while doing that work, and my time on base, as far as volunteer time goes, I mean, the things to do, I always sing in the church choir, and I'd always practice a little radio. And I, at that time, I meant to get my ham license and never did, but I finally have got them now. And with that, and I also was a member of various organizations. I also was a member of the, when we first started the Federal Credit Union on the base, I was among that group that first started, and we had a manager, John Lotz. And I volunteered, and we had board members, supervisory group, and we had loan group that reviewed the loans. And then from that, I worked there for, I don't know, a number of years. And then in 71, I was retired on a disability because I got injured picking up a manhole cover and on the base there, or doing an inspection. I did not pick it up. Another guy did, and he passed it down to me, and I thought his hook was in it. In other words, I passed it up to him from out of the hole, and his hook missed, and I thought he had it. I thought he let go, and I realized it, and then I ruptured the disc in my back and had to have an operation. And then I was retired from federal service. And then when I retired from that, at that time, the credit union was losing their manager. And so I took over as assistant manager before. Then I went into the credit union as the paid manager. And I managed the Federal Credit Union until we merged with the Fed Alaska. And then when I merged with Fed Alaska, and they, so in order to keep the credit union continuing as it was, that's why we merged, in other words. And then it was interesting, as I say, working with the credit union, you could help so many people and make loans and give them loans and show them how to save money, especially in the military, and show them how to get out of debt and all of that. And I saw that one of the main things that I did, I'm real proud about while being in the credit union, I petitioned the Federal Credit Union Bureau in San Francisco at that time to expand the credit union. And I expanded it through by including, we got an expansion to include teachers and in town, and we were able to include teachers and I think the state workers. And so I put on programs there here in town into schools to show them that we could, what the credit union is all about. And so we expanded it, and the credit union was able to continue, and it's here today at Fed Alaska, which is on base in downtown. But from being discharged, I mean retired from the civil service in 71, then I came in. I at that time I lived on base most times, but I lived on base and then here in town. And so I moved back into town from off base and worked at the credit union until in 72 the OSHA jobs began to come come available, and I decided that I would apply for one of those OSHA jobs, and I did, and I was accepted. And so I was then I went that was working for the state, and we went in training for 6 months or so in Chicago with the federal OSHA, and continued to at that time I was working for the state. And then I was the first from that job, I opened up the first occupational safety and health office here in Kodiak for the state.
Oh yeah, tell me about your wife, Bob.
Okay. Yeah, well, really, I was talking all of this. During that time, I forgot to mention that I was single when I, as most you would probably guess, when I first come to Alaska, and I said I was single up until 56, and I had met my wife when we were in high school, and she was from Pennsylvania, and her dad was a contractor. And we kept in touch. And so when I went back to North Carolina on that trip, I ran into her. And so I knew where she was, so I visited her. And then from that, being sweethearts in high school, I asked her if she would like to come to Alaska, and we'd get married. And so she didn't know if she wanted to come or not, but her mother really liked me, so I talked to her mother, and then they decided, yes, she'd come up. So my wife came here in 56. Gee, I forgot to say 56, I think it was she came. Yeah, in 56 she came here. And I was living on base, and she stayed with some friends of ours, and we got married a week after she was here. And we were married by Reverend Maletti from the Baptist Church. And we, at that time I was living, working on base at that time. And we lived out there, and she was a RN. The first year, when she first came here, she had a heck of a time getting in. She had to stay over in Anchorage because they couldn't land in here. And she had Mrs. Clark, a Beza Clark, that had a service station here in Kodiak at that time, right down here, right off of Marine Way, which is not where it is, Mill Bay Road, I guess it is now. And so anyway, she didn't like it, and I said to her, honey, I have a job. So if you stay a year and you don't like it after the year, then we'll all shift and go somewhere else. But after she stayed here and got busy in the community, went to work, and then she did private duty, and she also worked at the several of the doctors, Dr. Bob, she was employed by him for quite a long while. She did lab work and all of that. She worked, and then we had a daughter, which was born 6 years later, and which is Robinette, and she grew right up here and went to school on base. And like last night, I was up to see what they call the Nutcrackers, and her daughter is doing something similar to what she did when she was when she was about the same age, 5 and 6, tap dancing and took dance classes. And so she reminds me, yesterday she reminded me so much of my own daughter, and that, of course, that's her mother. But anyway, then my wife was right along with me. We moved in here, and she's worked here. And then after my daughter got going into high school, my wife decided to stay at home and with her so she could support her and everything. And she stayed home with her until my daughter went to college, left from here to go to college in Western Washington U. And then my wife decided to go back to work, and she works at the Baranoff Museum, and I've been up here the longest, but I think my wife knows more people and has more history about the history and everything than I do. And but we're still living here. My daughter's graduated, she's back, and we have two grandchildren, And they live here, and my wife and I are still here. And now to get back to where I went to work for the state as an enforcement officer for occupational safety and health, I worked for them for 17 years and decided, well, I think maybe I'd retire because the paperwork and stuff was getting to me. But now, sometimes again, I think maybe I should have worked another 5 years longer. But I was 62 then, I'm 66 now, so, and I have my safety consulting business. I still do some work and I keep my fingers in it. But we've enjoyed Alaska. We've lived here. It's really been home. To maybe get back to say what Kodiak was like when I come here, Kodiak was a small little village, a little small town, and everything was right down here on Marine Wave, and the small little houses, and I think there must have been more bars in town than there was any town that I've ever seen. There must have been 13 bars, and I think we had 13 churches. You could go, and you could come in here, and it was really unique to see a little place like this. Everybody was friendly, just like they were in the Aleutian Islands, and everybody knew everybody, and everybody helped everybody. I joined the volunteer fire department, and worked, stayed with them for a little. I mean, I didn't stay. Whenever I'd be in town, I would come in. I would help them fight the fires, if in fact that I was here. But otherwise, I was on the base. And I think maybe that might have been.
Not right. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Okay.